20, we find the accounts of the battles that we're getting ready to look at in 2 Samuel 21. In Chronicles, it comes right after the battle with Rabbah and Ammon. So anyway, time-wise, it may fit right along in there. But nonetheless, it's the next section in the chapter, but it doesn't necessarily follow in time order right after the 3 years of famine and the hanging up the 7 men to die. Okay? So with that said, this morning I'm going to borrow a title, but we're going to call this section in 2 Samuel 21, Facing the Giants. All right? So let's read 2 Samuel 21, verses 15 through 22. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel, and David went down and his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines, and David waxed faint, and Ishbi-Benob, which was of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he, being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, succored him and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David sware unto him, saying, Thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. It came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibbecai the Hushathite slew Saph, which was of the sons of the giant. And there was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, when Elhanan the son of Jaare-Oregim, the Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was yet a battle in Gath, where there was a man of great stature that had on every hand 6 fingers and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number. He also was born to the giant. And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, the brother of David, slew him. These 4 were born to the giant in Gath and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Now, if you got 1 Chronicles chapter 20, let's go ahead and read that while we're looking at it. 1 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 1 through 3, it's the story of, parenthetically in here is when David sinned with Bathsheba. 1 Chronicles 21, it came to pass after the year was expired at the times that kings go out to battle, Joab led forth the army and besieged the children of Ammon, but David tarried at Jerusalem. Okay, that's all it says. Samuel gave us the rest of the story with Bathsheba. Okay, so right after that, we get this story beginning in 1 Chronicles 20, verse 4. It came to pass after this, there arose war at Gezer with the Philistines, at which time Sibbecai the Hushathite slew Sippai, that was of the children of the giant, and they were subdued. And there was war again with the Philistines, and Elhanan the son of Jair slew Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, whose spear staff was like a weaver's beam. And yet again there was war at Gath, where was a man of great stature, whose fingers and toes were 24, 6 on each hand and 6 on each foot. And he also was the son of the giant. When he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother, slew him. These were born unto the giant in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Okay? So the one mention that's not in Chronicles that is in Samuel is the mention of the giant who nearly killed David. Okay? Now, before we read these passages this morning, how many of you ever remember hearing about Ishbi-Benob, Saph, and Hushathai? Okay? Not names that are rolling off the tip of your tongue at Bible quizzing time, okay? These aren't names that half of us can even pronounce, okay? And who knows if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but, you know, we'll just all take our own opinion on that one, okay? Who is Arba? Not Arby's. Arba. Okay? Who's Arba? Anybody know? Anybody remember? Dr. Scoble's not here this morning. He knows all these. It's amazing to watch. He knows all these names when you mention them, you know. Arba, that name goes all the way back to the book of Joshua. Okay? When Israel had conquered the majority, a good portion of the land, and then in Joshua 13, 14, they were going to divide it up and then let each tribe conquer what was left in their area. They were dividing it all out. They told the people to go through and survey and divide it into sections, and then they were assigning sections. Caleb comes to Joshua, and in Joshua chapter 14, he says, I'm as strong as I ever was. You know, my eyesight's just as good. My strength is just as good. Everything, you know, God's preserved me. in the same physical health and strength that I was 40 years ago when you and I went over there, or 45 years ago, whatever it was. And he said, I'm good. Give me an inheritance. Joshua said, what do you want? And he said, I want Hebron. He said, all right, I'll give you Hebron. But before the name was Hebron, the name was Kirjath Arba. Okay? Arba, if you go over to Joshua chapter 14, Arba was a giant. Okay? And he's in that lineage of the giants. So it was Kirjath of Arba. Okay? Just like we might say, we would associate a person with a place. Okay? This would be Springfield of Illinois, not Springfield of Missouri. Okay? Kirjath of Arba. Arba was what that place was known for. And Caleb said, I don't care if there's giants there or not. God is able to take out the giants. I'll take it. I want Hebron in that area, so that's what he got. But all I'm saying is that these are names that we don't think about. Okay? Now, there are times when we like things that are big, right? I like big things. I mean, there was a time before it was politically incorrect when supersizing your value meal, your combo, was a good thing, right? It supersized French fries. Now, not such a good thing. But man, when I was a teenager, you want the supersized French fries, okay? You want the supersized drink. You want the 44-ounce or the 64-ounce big gulp. You don't want the little 12-ounce can, or now it's an 8-ounce can, so you got to get two. But we like things that are big. I mean, I like seeing things that are big. I've had the privilege several times traveling with school quartets or different things to be passing through New York City. Okay, I'm not sure I'd want to live there. I admire the Wilts for what they're doing. I'm not sure that I want to do that. But it is an impressive place to visit. I mean, when I was growing up, we made a couple trips to the Chicago area. My dad grew up there. That's the Gauger's old stomping grounds, too. And I remember as a 12-year-old, we made a trip down to Chicago and visited the Sears Tower. Do you know what the name of it is now? They've changed the name. I don't think it's named the Sears Tower anymore. But anyway, at that time, it was the tallest building in the world, 110 stories, whatever. You know, we went down there and you got to pay some price per head. It's crazy. You know, you ride the elevator all the way up to the observation deck, which is like two floors below the top. And they've got this glass that's about this thick, you know. And there are people that are leaning up on the glass, and I'm going, I'm 12 years old, didn't really trust it, didn't want to get right up next to it. But you're standing on the sidewalk looking up at that thing, and it is huge. It is impressive, okay? And you get up there, and on a clear day, you can just see for miles. Big things are impressive. Well, when you go to New York City, the Twin Towers are no longer there. They're building four towers in its place. The Empire State Building's, I guess, the tallest building left in New York City. I mean, 86 floors is nothing to sneeze at, right? So, but you don't just have one of those. You have dozens. You have dozens of buildings all over the city that are 50, 60 stories tall. It's insane. You run out of land this way, you got to build this way, and that's what they've done. Those things are impressive. The, one of the longest bridges in the country, that spans over water is the Verrazano Bridge. Over there between, Brooklyn and Queens, I don't remember. It goes between two of the boroughs and it crosses over the Hudson River. The bridge, it's a toll bridge, and the bridge itself is about a mile and a half long. Okay? That is an impressive thing. If you go from D.C. area over into Maryland, there is a bridge that's a couple, 3 miles long going over the bay there. Those things are impressive. Now, when you get on the section in the middle of that bridge at Maryland where it's like metal grates, it's not concrete and asphalt anymore, it almost looks like, I don't know, you ladies may not know what I'm talking about, but the ramps that, fellas, that you drive the car up on, and it's got those little holes cut out in it to give you traction. Well, that's what the bridge looks like. You get to a certain section, I guess it's for rainwater runoff or snow melting or whatever, and it's like, seriously, I'm 75 feet above who knows how deep water, and I'm riding on a metal ramp. This is lovely, you know. But to sit back and think about how they built those things, there are times when big things are really neat and big things are really impressive. And there's other times when big things are really scary. Right? Okay? You know, when when you get, in school context, you get an assignment, all right, and now I've got a 20-page research paper. Okay, big is no longer impressive, big is scary. Okay, when you're a kid and somebody just jumps out and scares you and they're three times your size, big is no longer impressive, big is scary. And there are times when big is impressive, there are also times when big in our lives is intimidating. It's scary. And we're not really sure, okay, what am I going to do now? Am I going to survive this even? Well, that's more like what we're looking at here in 2 Samuel chapter 15. When we think about the giants, I want to take this passage, it's just seven verses, but I want to bring in other things from Israel's history and tie this in together. But think about facing giants. First of all, I want us to see the presence of giants. The presence of giants. Okay? If I said, name me a giant in the Bible, the name that you all could come up with off the top of your head is what? You got it. Goliath. Okay? Without looking at the passage, name me another one. All right, it gets a little harder. Okay? But Goliath is the most famous one. David, you know, we know the whole story. David took up the challenge when other men feared. David said, I'm not bigger than him, but God is. Okay? David took out Goliath, and that was the beginning of David's notoriety and eventually his becoming king. Okay? But that's not the only giant Israel ever faced. Okay? Israel had faced a whole bunch of them. And I want us to see here that giants are not an isolated incident. Okay? Thank God it's not an everyday thing. But it's not like if we might face one giant in our life, or praise God, that's over, I'll never have to do that again. Okay? Now, understand, we're talking about physical giants. And then I'm going to make application to problems or situations that we view as giants. Okay? So, will we ever face a physical giant? Probably not. The closest I've ever come to that in my life is when we lived over in South Carolina. There was a time or two. My wife's father worked security back when the Hornets were still in Charlotte. So I'll tell you how long ago that was. But he worked security for the Charlotte Hornets. And so, you know, it was some game that nobody wanted to see. It was the Seattle Supersonics or, you know, some team that was no good. It was the Detroit Pistons in between their good stretches, you know. Anyway, it was some game that nobody wanted to see. There were if the place holds 20,000 people, it was us and 4,000 of our closest friends. I mean, the place was empty. And so he was able to get us tickets. So I went to that game, and once we got in the building, he was able to get us seats down there, you know, 5-10 rows off the basketball court. Okay? That's probably the closest I've ever been to people that I would consider giants. I mean, these men are literally 6'10 and 7 foot tall. And they're doing incredible things. Athletically, they're moving around. I mean, you'd think they would be slow and stiff and whatever. They weren't. I mean, they're incredible. All right? But that's the closest thing in my life that I can come up with to a physical giant. Okay? However, that's not, you know, what we're looking at here is more intimidating than that. We're talking about Goliath was about 10 feet tall. Okay? Another one that we're going to look at here in just a minute was even bigger. But the point that I want to make is that under the presence of giants, is that giants were present throughout the history of Israel. Okay? Let's go all the way back to Numbers chapter 13. Turn there with me if you would, please. Or if you just want to take my word for it, I'll read it to you. But I'd rather you check me out and make sure that what we're telling you comes straight from the Scripture, okay? Numbers chapter 13. All right, some of you immediately know the context. Some of you maybe not. But quickly, just tell me in one sentence, where are we in Israel's history? All right, you can cheat and look at Schofield's notes if you got there now. It's when the spies had come back and the spies are giving their report, okay? Pick it up in verse 26. They went and came to Moses and Aaron, all the congregation of the children of Israel, into the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land where thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, verse 28, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And then here's the kicker. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. You can just hear the panic in their voice. We saw the children of Anak. Uh-oh. Verse 29, you know, they go on and talk about some more. Verse 30, Caleb and Joshua said, Look, we can. Verse 32, they brought up an evil report of the land which they'd searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. We saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. I mean, the way I picture that is the mental picture that I have as a young teenager standing on the sidewalk and looking up, trying to see the top of the Sears Tower, 110 stories up. I mean, when they looked at these giants, it may as well have been the Sears Tower versus a toddler. They said, we're like grasshoppers compared to these dudes. Okay, there's no way we want to fight them. So when God gave them the land, God knew there were giants there. Okay, so we see the presence of giants. I want you to see with me number two, prior encounters with giants. We've already read in Numbers 13, Israel's already bumped into the giants. You notice, it wasn't the giants that was the problem. Caleb and Joshua said, let us go over it once and possess it if we're well able to overcome it. And later on they said, God is able to deliver it into our hand. It wasn't the giants that was the problem. It was that they weren't willing to trust God with the giants. That was the real issue. And we'll get to that at the end, Lord willing. But in Numbers 13, when Israel faced going into the land, they faced giants. Turn over a few pages to the right to Deuteronomy chapter 2. Deuteronomy chapter 2. I'm going to have to summarize here. I think I've got more material than I've got time. So, Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse number 9. This is Moses at the end of his life reviewing things from the history of Israel. Okay? So he's reviewing some of their wanderings in the wilderness and some of their battles. Verse 9, The Lord said unto me, Distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar, which is the land of Moab, another name for it, unto the children of Lot for a possession. Remember, the two illegitimate sons of Lot, conceived in a drunken stupor with his two daughters, was Moab and Ammon. Okay? But because they were the children of Lot, God gave them an inheritance in the land. So he said, God's telling Moses, I've given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession, so you leave them alone. Now catch verse 10. The Emims dwelt therein in times past, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims. Okay? Now, Brother Finch can tell you this. In the Old Testament, when you see words that have I-M-S on the end of it, a lot of times that's the plural ending, right? Okay? So, if you take the I-M-S off the end of it, what do you have? Anak. Where have we seen that name before? Numbers chapter 13. They said, oh no, we saw the children of Anak. We can't do it. Okay? Well, here Moses is telling them that the Emims were just as big, just as strong as the children of Anak, the Anakims. Okay? But I want you to see, we're talking about the prevalence of giants. There are other people that have dealt with giants. The Moabites, verse 11, which also were accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites called them Emims. Okay? The Horims also dwelt in Seir before time, but the children of Esau succeeded them when they destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead, as Israel did unto the land of his possession, which the Lord gave unto them. All right? Drop down to verse 19. When thou comest nigh over the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give thee of the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. That also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites called them Zamzamims. Zamzamims means long-necked. I don't know if these people looked like giraffes, or it just looked like they had longer necks than normal because they were so large. I don't know. A people great and many and tall as the... What's the next word? Anakims. But the Lord destroyed them before them, before the Moabites and the Ammonites. And they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead, as he did to the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, when he destroyed the Horims from before them, and they succeeded them. Okay? What's Moses telling Israel right here? He's telling Israel, basically, you're not the only one that's ever had to deal with a giant. Okay? That's the lesson here from Deuteronomy chapter 2 and Deuteronomy chapter 3. Don't feel so sorry for yourself and have a pity party saying, oh no, nobody's ever had to deal with a situation as bad as this before. Yeah, they have. The Emims, the Zamzamims, the Horims, all of these people were just as nasty and big and strong and everything else as the Anakims. And yet God delivered them in front of not the chosen people. Israel was a God's chosen nation, right? And yet God drove out the giants before the children of Esau and the children of Lot. Okay? If God can do it for them, He surely can do it for Israel, right? That's the point that they're supposed to draw from this. And so we have prior encounters with the giants. We have other people here in Deuteronomy chapter 2. Deuteronomy chapter 3, we have Israel's prior encounter. Deuteronomy chapter 3, we turned and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, I love that. Okay? That is the perfect name for a giant, right?
Og. You just hear it in this deep bass voice. I am Og. You will die.
You know, it's the perfect name for a giant. But Og, king of Bashan, verse 3, the Lord delivered into our hands Og also, the king of Bashan, and all his people, and we smote him until there was none left remaining. And you can read the rest of that. Drop down to verse 11. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. Now, to us, it's like, yeah, whatever, big deal. I'd rather have a wooden bed than a metal bed. It wasn't like that in those days. To have a bed made out of iron took a lot of work, a lot of expense. He was the king, okay? So he got it. Is it not in Rabbath of the children of Ammon? Get this. 9 cubits was the length thereof, 4 cubits the breadth of it after the cubit of a man. Cubit of a man, elbow to fingertip, standardized measurement about 18 inches. You run the math. His bed was 13 and a half feet long. Goliath was 10 feet tall. This dude was somewhere around 12 or 13 feet tall. Okay? And yet, God delivered Og. I dare you, get your concordance or get your Bible program out and search the name Og. See how many times you find it. I found 22. Okay? God gave Og into the hand of the children of Israel as a lesson. Because he gave Og into their hand, and then he kept referring back to it. Hey, I want you to learn something here. But you see, Israel has faced Og. Verse 11 said he was of the remnant of the giants. Okay? Joshua chapter 14 that we've already referenced. Joshua took on Arba and the giants and drove them out of Hebron because God helped him. The prevalence of giants. Other people have dealt with giants. Israel's dealt with giants before. Men of faith like Caleb have dealt with giants before and overcome them. Okay? Then, under the... I got my points mixed up a little here. The presence of giants, prior encounter with giants, prevalence of giants. Okay, we've already talked about Goliath in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now, we're back in 2 Samuel 22. And we not only have Goliath, as if that wasn't bad enough, now we've got 4 of his brothers, cousins, or nephews. Okay? It's 1 Samuel chapter 21. Ishbi-Benob, which was of the sons of the giant. All right, now, who was the giant? Well, the Hebrew word there is Rapha. Okay? So that could have been a proper name, or that could have been a term, Raphaim or Rephaim. You see it in the Old Testament. In fact, 2 Samuel chapter 5, when the Philistines came up, they encamped in the valley of Rephaim. R-E-P-H-A-I-M. Okay? Well, that the literal rendering of that could be the valley of the giants. The Raphaim. Im is that plural ending? Okay? And so we got the valley of the giants was a name of an area there in the land. And so this guy, Ishbi-Benob, was of the sons of the giant. So he may have been Goliath's son. He may have been Goliath's brother, or the giant, the Rapha, may have been Goliath's grandpa. You know, they may have been cousins or whatever. But they were of the same family. So you got Ishbi-Benob here. And notice, whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight. And being girded with a new sword. All right, 300 shekels works out roughly to 8 pounds in our measurements. Okay? They're skimping on us now to keep the price point the same. They've made a bag of sugar 4 pounds instead of 5, right? Some of you ladies know that. You got to watch and see if you're getting 4 or 5 pounds. So you get a 4 pound bag of sugar. So I want you to take 2 4 pound bags of sugar, stick it on the end of a broom handle, and try to hold it out like this. You're like, can't do that. You're crazy. Well, that's what this guy did. I mean, that's how strong this guy was. His spear that he would manipulate like this, his spear that he may even throw as a weapon, the end of it weighed 8 pounds. Okay? This was a big man. Now, this was only half the size of Goliath's spear. Okay? But this was a big man. And David has been here, done that. David has fought giants before. He's killed Goliath. He's fought Philistines. And he's seen God's protection. And David, for whatever reason, this day didn't have it. Seems like maybe he was getting a little bit older, because that's the implication from the passage here. That after this battle, they're like, David, you're not going out to fight with us anymore. You're our leader. You're our general. But you're not going to go actually with the men into the battlefield. Okay? But David, for whatever reason, maybe he hadn't eaten well, maybe he was kind of sick, maybe he was just enough years older now that he didn't quite have the physical strength and the speed and the stamina that he did when he was younger. But this guy, Ishbi-Benob, thinks, I'm going to get him. And you can't help but think there's a motive of revenge here, right? Goliath was either his brother or his cousin or something like that. This guy killed my brother, he's been a thorn in our side, and I'm going to get him. And then it says that Abishai succored him. That you know, it's not succored like we'd think of, you know, to take advantage of somebody or a sucker punch, okay? That word succored means to help, to minister nourishment, to be of assistance, okay? And so Abishai came to his aid is what that means, and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David swearing to him, saying, thou shalt no more go out with us to the battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. David, you're the light. You're our bright light. A light many times referred to the glory of something. Okay? And they said, look, you're our bright spot. You're our light. We don't want that light put out. You're not going out into the battlefield with us. You stay at the headquarters area. Run the battle. Okay? Interesting that I'm curious where this fit in. Okay? I'm curious if this fit in before Bathsheba or after. I wonder if this happened, and so that's why David stayed home when kings went forth to battle. But he still could have gone out somewhere, right? Or maybe it happened after that, and David feels so guilty about not having gone out to the battle. If I'd only gone out to the battle, this whole mess wouldn't have happened with Bathsheba. So now he's going out, and he's not going out, but he's going to go out with his sword, and he's going to go fight, and he almost gets himself killed. And, you know, these are real scenarios here. This fits in real life. It's not just a Bible story that we, you know, put in pictures. But David, nonetheless, nearly got himself killed by Ishbi-Benob. Verse 18. There was a battle in Gath with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibbecai the Hushathite slew Saph. All right, that's all we know about these guys. Okay, so the giants. We have Saph. We have here in verse 19, the brother of Goliath, the Gittite. That, you see, the brother of is in italics. Okay, that's something the translators put in there to help us understand. When you compare it with 1 Chronicles chapter 20, it says Elhanan slew Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite. Okay? Well, the brother of was just kind of assumed here, so they put it in to help the two passages match up. So people don't say, oh, the Bible doesn't match up. Whatever. It was understood, and whoever wrote Samuel just thought, well, I don't have to put that part in. But this guy slew Elhanan, the son of Jehoiakim, slew the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Okay? That reference is used over and over again. I mean, a weaver's beam is not a broom handle. Okay? It's not a shovel handle. It's more like a 4x4 post or a 6x6 post. Okay? Some of you ladies are looking at me like, I have no idea what that means. All right? Go look at the deck on the backside of a house. Those posts that support it, that's what we're talking about. That was the handle for his spear. Okay? And these guys were monsters. They were giants. And that's part of how they were described. Verse 20, there was yet a battle in Gath. There was a man of great stature, had every hand six fingers, on every foot six toes, 4 and 20 in number. Over in 1 Chronicles chapter 20, it calls a man of great stature whose fingers and toes were 4 and 20, and then you six on each hand is italics, and six on each foot is italics. Okay, it was understood. But that's why I call him 6 by 6. 6 and 6. Okay? That was how he was described in 1 Chronicles chapter 20. But, or you could call him 24, because he had 24 digits instead of 20. But, you know, I have never seen the entire, I know this was a thing with Pastor Camp and his daughters and stuff, they talked about it a lot. I've never seen the entire movie, The Princess Bride, you know, and I don't feel that my life is cheated because I haven't, okay? But I have seen parts of it. And I had sisters and whatever. But there is a character in that movie, the guy that killed the other guy's father had six fingers on one hand. I can't help but think this is where they got that idea. And if you Google it or you look it up, there are cases where this happens sometimes. Dr. Finch can tell you better than I can, but there's times when somebody has an extra thumb or an extra finger. This guy had six fingers and six toes on each of his limbs. I mean, so at least if he got a mutation, he got an equal one. So that's kind of unusual in and of itself. But what I'm saying is this guy was known for his physical peculiarity. He was also a giant. But that's all we know about him. Every one of these men were killed with the help of God. All right, I got to move on quickly. Number four, the power of God overcomes giants. That's where I'm trying to get to, and I want to leave that out. Okay? You have heard of David. If you've been in this Sunday school class for any length of time, you've heard the name Abishai several times. Abishai was a brother of Joab. Okay? But those are probably the only two names that you've ever heard out of this list. I mean, who is Sibbecai?
I don't know.
Who's Elhanan?
I don't know.
Who's Jonathan? Oh, I know. That was Saul's son. That was David's friend. No, actually, this is Jonathan, the son of Shimeah. No clue. Don't know who that guy is. Who is, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, you've never heard of these people. Here's the point that I want to make. It is not the person alone that kills the giant. It's the power of God working through a person that takes out the giants that we face. David, you know that name. You know the story of Goliath. Sibbecai, no idea who that guy is. Elhanan, no idea who that guy is. But sometimes we think, boy, that's great, but I'm not David. I'm not even Joab or Abishai. I'm not one of the, you know, Abishai was one of David's 30 mighty men. I'm not one of those guys. You know, those guys were something special. Hey, guess what? Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, Elhanan, Sibbecai, those were normal people that nobody's ever heard of. The point is this. The power of God overcomes giants. Whether you're somebody that everybody's heard their name, like David, whether you're somebody like Sibbecai, that by this time next week, you won't remember his name, it doesn't matter. God is able to use Josh, Michelle, Mark, Sarah. It doesn't matter. God can use us to overcome giants because it's not about us. It's about the power of God. That's the key distinction that we've got to make. So, there were giants. There were giants all the way back when they started to go into the land. There were giants after they'd conquered the land and Caleb had to drive them out. There's still giants when we get down to the time of David. Eventually, it kind of petered out. But God left giants there for hundreds of years. Why? God knows. He's trying to teach some lessons, and it surely gave us some lessons. But the power of God overcomes giants. Deuteronomy chapter 9, when Moses was talking to Israel, he said, look, they're bigger than you, but they're not bigger than God. The giants are not beyond God's power. Deuteronomy chapter 3, God delivered Og. In 1 Samuel 17, God delivered Goliath. In 2 Samuel 21, Ishbi-Benob, Sath, the brother of Goliath, and 6 by 6. Every one of those were delivered not by feats of human prowess, but by the power of God. David was a teenager, maybe 18, when he took out Goliath, and he took him out with a slingshot. Okay? be the equivalent of taking him out with a Nerf gun almost today. Not quite. I mean, it was a rock. But it's certainly not any of the fancy toys that the military guys get to play with. The point is, it was not the weapon, it was the power of God. God delivered through Israel, the chosen people, and he delivered through the Edomites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the non-chosen people. He delivered through David, he delivered through other people who you've never heard of. Many people have faced giants, we all face giants. Okay? We'll just address the elephant in the room for a minute. Is this church facing a giant right now? Yeah. Maybe more than one. Okay? We're looking at something that this church hasn't done in almost 17 years. Try to find a pastor. And all the things that go along with that. Does that look overwhelming? Yeah. Is this... Does your mind run wild with possibilities? If you let it. But is that a giant? Yeah. Are there other things that we face? Medical conditions? Yeah. Financial crunch? Yeah. Health conditions like Michael Coffey that we can't do anything about but pray. There are situations that we face repeatedly through our lives. Some are just trials and difficulties, and there are some that are giants. But we must remember, it's not about how big I am. It's not about how big you are. It's about how big God is. That, my friends, is the key. When Israel focused on the giants, they failed and they had to walk 40 years in the wilderness. When Joshua and Caleb focused on God, they saw the blessings of God. So the question becomes, when you face a giant, do you respond with fear and fleeing, or do you respond with faith? Can we take care of this giant? Not by ourselves. But when we get on our knees and say, God, we can't do it, we've got to have your help, it's not bigger than God. And no giant that we will ever face is bigger than our God. Okay? I'm preaching to myself, because I got to remember this too. I'm a man of little faith. I feel like Peter so many times, Lord, depart from me, I'm a sinful man, I'm a man of little faith. But if we focus on the giant, we fail. If we focus on God and choose to act in faith, God brings victory in spite of us, not because of us.